Welcome to the Spirit of Work solo episodes of the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. If you long to see happier and more humane workplaces and want to reflect on how that could happen, you are in the right place. These monthly solo episodes are based on my book, The Spirit of Work, Timeless Wisdom, Current Realities. The book was written from three complementary sources of knowledge. One, the sacred writings of the world's spiritual traditions. Two, scientific developments on human behavior and well-being in the workplace. And three, insightful experiences from business, my clients, and my own work. In each episode, I elaborate on one of the ideas from the book and ask questions to help us all think more holistically about work. Join me as we combine the wisdom of the past and the reading of our current realities to build the future of work. And now for today's episode. Hello, Culture and Leadership Connections listeners. I'm going to talk to you today about the spirit of work. This is episode 9, Finding the Justice Quotient in a Group Problem. Episode 9 is about page 42 in the book, The Spirit of Work, where I talk about three pieces that have to be in place in order to have a just solution. And this just solution is something where everybody's needs have been considered, they've all had a voice, and then a decision is made based on that rather than based on assumptions or some kind of an ideology that has not been verified. So these are the three quotients. The first one is the diversity of perspectives must be included. So if everybody is the same or thinks the same way, you're not likely to have a just decision, because you haven't looked at all the angles. It's sort of like considering a house where you're only looking at the bedroom and not taking account of the bathrooms, the kitchen, the living room, the front and back entrances, the roof, the foundation. You're just looking at the one bedroom and making decisions based on that. You can see how that would affect the whole house. It could be negative if that's the only perspective that's ever considered. And the same in any group of people. If only one person has a voice and none of the other people have a voice, you won't get a diversity of perspectives. If you are in a situation where people are similar, then you need to seek out a diversity of perspectives by looking for other ways that you could get another point of view. This will help ensure that whatever decisions you make will be more just, because incorrect and insufficient data leads to incorrect decisions. So you have to get correct and sufficient data in order to make a decision. And that data needs to come from a variety of verified sources. That's number one, diversity of perspectives. Number two is to consult those most affected. That means the end user. Whoever is most affected by the decision needs to be consulted in some way, shape, or form. Now, if that person is vulnerable and cannot make a decision on their own, then it would be together with their guardian or whoever it is that's working with them together to consult how they would be most affected, because the person who's closest to the job is the expert on the job. So it's either the direct affected person or that person who works most closely with them would be required in order to have number two of the justice quotient category met. And this is rarely done. Oftentimes, decisions are made from the top down without having consulted anybody who is involved in the process, or if they consult the people in the process, they haven't consulted the end users, and there's no feedback loop that can be closed. So you can't check in with all the parties and then get the feedback and make sure that the data that you're receiving continues to be correct and continues to be necessary and appropriate for what you're looking to improve or change. The third justice quotient is that all stakeholders should be present while you're discussing the decision. Or in a situation where there is an imbalance of power, you would need to consider the rights and responsibilities of those most affected and consider the power imbalance dynamics. Then you would ask those most affected if the proposed resolution would satisfy their concerns. That's similar to what can happen in an arbitrator or in a lawyer situation. But we don't have to go into the legal world to be able to discover how this could work in the workplace. So remember, the three altogether are number one, seek diversity of perspectives. Number two, consult those most affected. And number three, all stakeholders present or consider the rights and responsibilities of those most affected and the power imbalance dynamics. Then ask those most affected if the resolution that's proposed would satisfy their concerns. So Those three things are necessary in order to have a just decision. Now, let me give you some examples so you can imagine this in real life. All of these are groups I have worked with, people I have coached, and so they are based on the real situations. And the reason I'm choosing them is because they have come up several times in multiple situations. So it's not an isolated incident. And that's why I consider that it's necessary to use something like that to apply to the justice quotient, because we're getting a diversity of perspectives from different industries. I have three examples to tell you about to show you how this justice quotient could work out. One is a manager trying to train a lead hand for a safety presentation. Second one is a toxic manager in different departments who is targeting a female engineer in charge of the safety of the entire project. And the third one is a patient in a hospital who has a very aggressive relative who screams at and bullies the nurses. So we're going to try to use the justice quotient to improve their capacity for justice, which would mean that everybody has their needs met and the greater good is being considered in addition to individual inputs and voices. I'm going to start with the first one. The manager who is trying to train a lead hand for a safety presentation. This manager had a lot of good intentions and was really interested in building the capacity of his team. So when we worked together, he said that his first goal was to train his lead hand to be able to do safety presentations and then to get his lead hand to find someone else in the crew who might like to also learn how to do that. So he was building capacity within the team. It's a noble goal and it was a great idea. So no problem with the goal. He picked the lead hand. The lead hand definitely wanted to learn how to do the safety presentation, was very keen to do it. And then the manager proceeded to train him. And the more time he spent with him, the worse the lead hand got and the more flustered he became. And so the manager wasn't paying attention to those things. He just himself got more and more frustrated and thought, how come I'm helping him so much and he's getting worse all the time? So he started to think about it and he thought, well, maybe I haven't asked him what he needed. So he didn't consult the end user. He didn't seek a diversity of perspectives. He was only basing everything on his own assumption and his own frustration. And he didn't work with the lead hand to figure out what might be useful in terms of help. He just kept dumping what he thought would be helpful, which ended up being a lot of ongoing critique and discouragement. So once he realized that this was happening, he felt pretty bad about it and decided he was going to tell the lead hand that he thought he would do just fine. And why didn't he just go ahead and do the next safety presentation? And the manager didn't need to see it ahead of time. He would just trust that he would be doing a great job. So this was encouraging, very encouraging to the lead hand. And the lead hand proceeded to create his safety presentation and did it in front of the crew with his manager watching from the back. And he just crushed it. He did a great job. And the crew loved it. And the crew gave him a standing ovation. And he was really proud of himself. So you can see that what happened here was a rebalance of justice. There was a resetting of justice. The manager's power differential over the lead hand was not being considered, and he didn't ask the lead hand what he needed. And because he didn't seek all of those things, consult those most affected, seek a diversity of perspectives, and have himself work with the lead hand to figure out what would be the most useful way for him to move ahead with the training. So what happened was it created a situation of discouragement. And essentially became unjust because he couldn't show his capacity and he was getting worse and worse and feeling more and more demoralized. But as soon as the manager realized he'd made this mistake, he reset the balance by telling his lead hand that he believed in him, which is really also very helpful for establishing justice because oftentimes people who have been victimized or feel that they've been hard done by in a situation don't feel heard. And if they tell their story, people dismiss it. And it feels awful. It feels like you're being dismissed as a human being. So this manager was smart and reset the justice balance. And he was really thrilled by this. And this gave him some ideas about how he could continue with team capacity in the future. And he decided to consult the team about what they wanted to learn and how that would benefit them and benefit the company before running out and making all these decisions that would not have used any of the justice quotients in it. So that's the first example. Second example, and all of these I have seen many times, but this particular one that I'm thinking of right now is a very toxic manager in a different department who had to work hand in hand with the only female engineer who was in charge of the safety component of the site and had to sign off on drawings and, you know, had a lot of responsibilities with all the different departments. But this one manager in one of the departments went out of his way to undermine her. He called her misogynist names. He made demeaning remarks when she was explaining to the team what they needed to do to change some of their safety protocols that they were not following or where they were cutting corners. And because of that, people were worried they would be the next target. And so they didn't say anything to support her. They didn't say anything to speak up against this guy because they knew what a bully he was. And so everybody was living in fear. It was a very awful situation. And the company HR found out about it because the female engineer said, I have a complaint and I want this to be addressed. And so the female engineer had gathered all of her data and said, these are all the instances of me being demeaned. This is the name calling. This is the way it was undermined. And this is how my decisions were overridden or dismissed. And this is how the safety of the company, the people, the equipment, and the end users are all compromised because of this behavior. And so the HR listened and then decided to go individually to each of the stakeholders and gather evidence. So they consulted all those affected and got a diversity of perspectives. And then what they did is they put everybody together into the same room and let everyone just say whatever they wanted to say. Now, the female engineer was very prepared with a kind of a presentation where she would say, these behaviors are causing these problems for everybody and they need to stop. So she didn't do any blaming. She didn't do any gaslighting or throwing the toxic manager under the bus. And he, on the other hand, was allowed to rant and rave and call her names for 20 minutes during the meeting while everybody else looked at their shoes. So if you're bringing everyone into the room and not taking the power dynamic into consideration or expecting a victim and a bully to kiss and make up, that is not justice. That is injustice. In that case, what needs to happen is that HR, after having gathered all the evidence and realized that it was overwhelmingly this one manager who was causing problems, was to give a disciplinary action to this manager and to let the rest of the team know that their rights would be upheld and that this female engineer would not be allowed to be treated in this manner. And if she were, she would just need to report that and it would go into another dismissal, which possibly could cost the manager his job. But that didn't happen. Instead, they just said, you know, we just need to put everyone in the same room and it'll all be worked out. It won't be worked out because there was a very strong power dynamic, a very strong power difference and differential. And because people were so afraid of this manager from this department and what he might do to them, they didn't dare speak up because they knew that any support that they'd get would be too weak in comparison to his bullying. So what happened as a result of that is this female engineer quit. And so did their other three top people. So the company, because of their lack of courage and their lack of ability to simply say, the overwhelming evidence is that you need to correct your behavior. And this is the timeline. And if you don't, these are the consequences. Because that was not done, injustice happened. And the result was that they lost all their best people. Everyone was psychologically damaged from what had happened. And the person who was the bully got worse. So what has to happen? Does murder have to happen or something like that in order for the person who is the bully to be called to account for the actions and to be disciplined? If people don't feel protected in a situation, then you can't have justice. Now, compare that with what McDonald's does to take care of their managers in front of aggressive customers. If an aggressive customer comes in, whoever the manager is on site immediately goes and stands next to the person at the till or the person who is the target of the aggression and asks the customer, is there something I can help you with? The customer knows right away this is the manager. And so that already helps to reset the power imbalance. And then the manager will do something like say, we don't accept abuse of employees. And here's a cup of coffee. Please take your business elsewhere. So that is a way that the person who is being targeted can feel protected. The person who's bullying is put in their place. And everyone in the organization can see that there is a way to deal with things that keeps everybody protected and working together and opens them up to be able to speak out when there is a problem that comes up. So that's two contrasting examples for my second one. And the final example I wanted to relate is a nurse. So we have two nurses working in a hospital with an elderly patient, and the patient's relative comes in to visit. And the relative, who is not a medical professional and has no medical experience, thinks that a catheter should be taken out from the patient and starts to scream at a nurse to do it. And the nurse is completely intimidated by this bullying behavior and says over and over again that she's not going to do it because it hasn't been authorized by any of the medical professionals who authorize removal of or reinsertion of a catheter. And he starts to get really intimidating and gets right in her face. And so she caves and starts to carefully remove the catheter. And of course, all this was making noise. So the other nurse, who is Black, came up to see what was happening and see if she could support her colleague. And at that point, the angry relative turned on her and started calling her racist names and saying he was going to launch a complaint against both of them for their terrible and incompetent nursing behavior, even though he knew nothing about what he was talking about and he was probably going to make things worse. So at that point, the Black nurse explained to him that removing the catheter at this point without proper authorization could cause harm to the patient and that there was no sign of infection or anything not working. And this was something that needed to be looked at by the team. And he started to get more aggressive. And so she backed off and he finally left, stomped out of the hospital. He did launch a complaint, and launching the complaint just about caused the Black nurse to be completely defeated, because she said, how is it that someone who is so aggressive and so mean can get away with launching a complaint against someone who is coming to help a colleague? So her charge nurse told her she would protect her and all of the other people that were supposed to support the nurse, including her union, said, we'll help you with this because there's a due process. We'll inform you about all the steps along the way. So see, they went to seek the diversity perspectives. They got all the necessary data that they required. They found out that no harm had been done, that both nurses had been treated in a very disrespectful and abusive manner, and that the complaint was going to be dismissed. And at that point, the person who had caused all this harm was going to be banned from coming into the hospital. So justice was done. So how did that happen? Let's look at the justice quotient. The charge nurse and the union representative both looked for diversity perspectives. They consulted those most affected. So they looked to see the patient was the one that they had to check out first. Turned out the patient was not affected adversely in any way. And then those who were the target of the bully, the two nurses, were consulted. And their stories were corroborated perfectly well. And so they had all of that there. And so all of the people that were involved with that were present. However, the bullying relative of the patient was not present, because what would that have done? That would have upset the power imbalance and caused no justice to happen. So then what happened was this complaint was dismissed and the fellow was banned from coming into the hospital. So he more or less was read the verdict and the nurses felt safe and felt protected. So justice was done. Now, typically you want to have all stakeholders present when you're making a decision, unless harm will be done, if that is the case. And if harm will be done, then the collective and the people in charge and the due process make a decision, which is then communicated to the person who would cause the harm. And that way, they protect the people who need to be protected and make sure that the people who have caused the difficulty realize that they can't get away with doing that again. So there you have it. That's how I would use the justice quotient to understand these. Because if you don't recognize that there's injustice in each of these situations, then you can't correct it. So the first thing, coming back to the virtue sequence that we talked about earlier, is you have to care enough about the people to want to find out the truth. So you start with love, which is the care part. And then you look for the truth and you seek the diversity of perspective so that you can reach justice. When you have done that, you've consulted most affected and you've considered the rights and responsibilities of those most affected and considered the power imbalance of the dynamics, then you can make a decision either collectively if no one will be harmed, or in a collective way that will then apply an appropriate decision to whoever was causing the difficulty, not in a way that would be overbearing or inappropriate, but a way that would show the person that they cannot continue to perpetrate this kind of behavior. So I hope that you found that useful and that you'll be able to use this idea of the justice quotient of three parts. Think of the peace as a sign, and there's a part in each of the peace sign, and that will help you when you're moving forward in your own life with your own work. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you will share this with a friend, and that you will leave a review on our fan list, which you can find on shiftworkplace.com/podcast. And on that fan list, you can also contribute to the podcast if you would like to help us out to keep our costs low for the podcast production. So thanks again for listening, and may Culture and Leadership Connections continue to guide and inspire your day. Here's a lovely review that Christina Monai left for the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast after she listened to Father Raldi Jack Diaz's episode 104. Christina wrote, "What a great podcast. I love the content and knowledge from all the guests, but especially Father Raldi. The theme of delay is not denial really resonated with me. I highly recommend this podcast." Thanks so much, Christina. Appreciate your shout out.